Charlie, and she's going to be talking about women in the canneries, in the fishing industry, and women in the fishermen union. Okay.
Just pretend it isn't here. I can just hold it.
Oh, yes. Yes, we started going to the canneries when I was very young. My children, my son, he's got a granddaughter now, and the daughter I had, I lost her, the oldest one. She worked in the cannery. She worked on the line. And we were a very jolly bunch. And I used to help the Indians up there because they didn't understand very well the white man's ways. Sometimes he tried to get the best of us, and I'd go right there after the manager. But otherwise, we were happy. First, we take off from, we lived down the waterfront here in Capilano. We take off, bundle our clothes, and catch the Venture or Camus and go up to Knight's Inlet. That's quite a ways to go to. That was happy for us because there's a new place in the spring. Sometimes we'd go up in the beginning of June because I want to can sakai that goes up the river for my own use. So we'd get up there and it'd be new, everything quiet, just the manager and some other people, a few people would be there, storekeeper. And we get settled there and my husband cuts wood. They got a drag saw somebody owned. They'd cut a pile of wood because we had wood stoves, cook stoves, we'd use for the whole 6 months we're up there. That's from June on. And then by the end of June, the people be coming into the shacks, the only one-room shacks, and the no bathrooms, but they got showers in the end where the shacks were, where we could have our baths and the toilet. We had just way out on piles, way out for the ladies and another made for the men. And everybody get there happy. Everything was new. I'd already finished all my canning. I canned about 100, 2.5 pound cans of sakai. What I couldn't can, I salted in a little barrel. And I dried some, had a little smokehouse. I was all ready for the winter myself. And the other people get there, and I knew them all. They were from Alert Bay, Harbling Down, Kincom. Some from Squamish here, a few. And my husband hired a lot of white girls from Vancouver. They got there, we settled them down, and he got his crew because he had the Jesse Island 5 seine boat. His crew got there, he settled them. What they needed, they got in the store, boots, this and that, oil, raincoats, and families got all the food they needed. And pretty soon they all went out, the seine boats. It's nice to see them going around the point in Knight's Inlet. We'd be watching all, standing around. But we're not very busy in July. Not too busy. We just have an easy life, go bear picking. Only trouble was there's a lot of snakes there, but they never harmed nobody. So it didn't bother us. I just grab stones and chase them away. They go slithering somewhere and the woman would follow me. I understood their language because I went there for years. We'd go to Alert Bay and I kept learning. Their language is way different. Like if you were speaking in English, the other part person is speaking in French. That's the way the Squamish, the northern language, are different. But I understood them, just that I couldn't talk very good their language. But they didn't know mine at all. But I understood their language, because We never talked Indian. We still don't talk Indian. The only one who talks Indian is myself and my sister that's laid up, and this old man that made this tape.
Did people speak English because the employers at the cannery spoke English?
Because we went to the convent here, we went to school, and they wouldn't allow us to say even yes or no, or we'd get punished. And they said we'd go to hell if we told a lie. So pretty soon we lost our language, but I didn't. I'd talk, I dared say a word there. And my sister didn't stay very long. She didn't like the convent. And she ran away. She went to our grandparents, lived in Ambleside. They had a house there. It's where the park is now, where the tracks are. Our grandparents lived there. They're very old. And she was hiding there with my brother. He's dead now, Moses Antone. They were small yet. But I stayed at the convent, and I pretty forgot our language, but it come back again. So the Indians up there were in the cannery. They all talked Indian. Nobody talked English. They didn't understand very well. But I could get them to understand. And I'd help the Indians there. If somebody was sick, I'd go help them, especially summer complaints. Because they'd eat stuff in the hot weather. It's hot there in July. I'd go help them. I'd tell them what to do. Never to drink the water, because we don't know. It comes from the mountain. I told them there might be bugs. You'll never see them, but there are. That's what we learned in the hygiene book.
Right.
And they boil them. Boil the water, I told them. Then cool it off. Have it for your drinking water. The cooking's all right, I told them, because it'll boil or wash. It's all right. And we just stayed that way, a happy crowd, picking berries together. And pretty soon we'd look at the point, seine boats coming around the point, or a packer. We're going to get busy, I tell the ladies. They nod their heads. They know what busy was in English. Sure enough, early next morning, the Chinese boss goes, there's a big stick and he's hitting our doors. Get up, get up. You got to go wash fish. I don't know who's washing fish. Got to fill cans, got to be there at 8 o'clock. We all get up, hurry in the morning. He's there at 5 o'clock, pounding our doors. That's the start, the very start of the canning season. Then we're all ready. The washers rush over to the cannery, got their brushes, their oil aprons. You got to have a uniform and a bonnet.
And did you have to buy your own uniform?
No, the cannery supplied it, but you had to keep it clean yourself. They wouldn't allow you to dress the way you are. But we never wore boots, never did. That's one place I never wore gum boots in that cannery. It was dry inside that cannery. Of course, it had big cracks on the floor. Any water would go down, you know. And the washers hurry up, Chinese, Indian woman, older woman, and some teenager Indians. They would be waiting there with our knives. The hours have a file to sharpen my knife. I'd have 2-3 knives. And pretty soon the fish would come. They'd bring it in boxes and they lay it before you where you're standing. And I was very small and light then, and I was too short for the trays that you put down to put your cans that's full. So I always wore spike heels, very high heels. And I could use them from 8 o'clock to midnight. Never tired me. I was so short, I couldn't reach those trays. And they'd laugh at me because sometimes I'd be late running. I'd get my daughter, Barbara, now that's working, get everything ready before I'd run, and those heels make noise come the sidewalk. It's a mountainside, it's all sidewalks, boards, you know.
Is this in Alert Bay?
That's in Knights Inlet.
Knights Inlet, right, okay.
And I'd come running, and that'd be Saturday then. And the guys look out. Oh, one guy says, Gideon Warnock, he's still alive yet. He's a little younger than I. He says, I thought there was a horse coming. I kept laughing, I kept running, I got the cannery. And there's one old lady, I think she died about 8 years ago, Mrs. Knox. And I'd run to my place, Josephine, she'd say, for Josephine, you know. Josephine, Alec, and Josephine. She says in her language, she says, I'm a very crazy child in her language, you know, because I'm always late. Then we start working. Whistle blows for 12 o'clock. We got 1 hour. And, of course, I got to run again with my high heels. We lift straight up the stairs. My daughter was small yet, just about 2 years, Barbara. Get there, I'd make the lunch. Well, we got an hour. I got a 12 or 13-year-old. My cousin used to watch my daughter, babysit, make the lunch, and about 5 or 10 to 1, I'd hurry back again to the cannery. We start at 1 o'clock again. Well, we get through early because there isn't that much fish at the beginning of the season. We're all happy to get through. We go by piecework, you know. And the washers are done long ago because there isn't that much. No machinery at all.
All hand.
The washers, ones cutting the heads, chopping the heads, but then the fillers. Just when it goes in the line women are all there inspecting what the cans it's going. They're all right. But these women that fill cans up there are first class. They just get the right weight. I had to be like that. I had to get the right piece. And they told me, you wouldn't like to buy a can that's full of craps and that, they told me, and that felt good. So every can was perfect. I know that. I've seen it going on the line because my daughter was a line woman, my oldest daughter I lost. I would go home. That's the weekend. That's early beginning. Pretty soon the big run comes. Oh, me. The chairman goes, they're hitting our doors, 5 o'clock. Everybody wash fish. I'm not a wash fisher, I thought. You have to, because there's a lot of fish. There's a packer in and 2 seine boats. Oh, my, I hurry up, dress. I heat my tea. That's to make my own bread. And I toast on the stove, no electric lights there. I just had a gas lamp and an oil lamp. And I got my toast, I put on the stove and I hurry. And I wake up my little girl. You better eat something before I go. You can go to sleep again, I told her. So she sat down, started crying a little bit, and she forgot. Oh, about 7, I run to the cannery. It's not my regular time, but I have to go help wash fish. They got a lot of places. And I help them. 8 o'clock, it blows again, the whistle. That's for us fillers. Off we run, the ones that are washing. Go in our places and we start filling cans. No rest period in between. But you're allowed to go to the washroom anytime. Want to go, but we hate to leave our work because the harder you work, the little more money you make. But the wages were awfully cheap, very cheap, only 2 bits an hour for washers. And we used to get $6 for 150 trays. And that's 48 cans, the small ones in one tray. And I don't know, about 20 cans in the pound tray.
What year was that? Around
when?
Do you remember what year that was? Around?
That's, I don't know.
1940s?
42. In my daughter's 36. Divide that by 40.
Oh, okay. So your daughter's 36 now?
Yeah, the one next door. 70.
So it was around 1942?
Yeah, that would be, yes.
Yeah.
And that was before. I didn't have her then. I never thought I'd get her, but I had the other children. It was 1930-something. Oh, what year it was. I never took notice.
Okay. Where did the kids stay? Did they stay down here with your family when you went up there, or where did the kids go while you were canning?
Oh, they stayed in the shacks, yeah. All the children. Each one had somebody to watch, you know. And they'd hire an older person to go around, see, they paid her 20 cents an hour to see that everything was going all right, you know, with the babies and the children, that there was no accidents, you know. They could fall over the railing, go to the rocks, you know. But there was no accidents. The children were used to that life. Nobody ever fell or climbed the railing, you know. And when they tell us, oh, we'd work from 7 to sometimes midnight. Oh, we'd work. And the woman on the line worked till 1 o'clock as the line's going, you know. And the ones cooking, the guy, his name was Mickey, would be there till 2 or 3 in the morning in the shiny bosses, and the ones cleaned the cannery. They kept it spotlessly clean, you know, the floors, because there was big flies, they call bottle flies, so everything had to be cleaned and salted, you know, the coarse salt. And we'd work all hours from then on. That's the sockeye season. And then the pinks come in, that's where we pretty die. They come by the thousands. Sometimes one same boat would get 20,000, 30,000. You could see them around the point because the packers couldn't bring them, so the seiners bring their own. You could see them come around the point just like if they were swaying, you know. They're so full of fish. Oh, we all groaned. And we work on, there was no ice, no place to make ice. They just throw salt on, you know. They hose it down with salt water. Then they throw salt on so the flies don't get on. And early in the morning, we all go to wash fish. And we got packs and packs all lined in the warehouse. And the manager says, everybody's got to go to the warehouse and box. There's a steamboat coming to take all the pack. That's about pretty 1 month's work, you know. So we get up at 5 and we all run to the pack warehouse and we start boxing the sockeye. Box it all up and the longshoremen's come and they start bring them in those luck trucks. And then next we get to the pinks, that's the humps. They're 1 pound talls. We start boxing all those. Then the whistle blows, 7 o'clock. The washers run in and start washing fish. And then some have to go help them. 8 o'clock, the whistle blows and we leave what we're boxing. We run to fill cans. Sometimes it's sockeye or that's quarter pounds. And we got an inspector. She was an Indian woman. She was very old, but so strict, she wouldn't break a smile. I said if she ever smiled, her face would crack. She had to, you know. She wouldn't give us nobody anything at all, you know. She'd be real strict. But finally she broke down in her health. I'd been going there, the children were growing. My son was getting to be a teenager. My daughter, Barbara, was... I had Sally then. She was given to me. The mother just left her. And I went to the office and they said, there's a baby, unwanted baby. We're going to put her in the orphanage, a little girl. I guess she'll die anyway. She just seems to be skin and bone. She must have been starving. I turned around to the Indian agency. I'll take her, I told them. And this was in May. And she was 4 months old then. All right, they said, you come tomorrow morning. We got her in the hospital trying to build her up. All right, I told them. We're still there because my son's in the hospital that lives across here. He had pneumonia. So I was going to see him. Then I had my daughter, Barbara. She was about 8. She was going to school up Squamish. I told her, we're taking a baby with us. That's the next door to Ellie then. She looked at me. She never said a word. Then we went to the hospital. We picked up the baby, the formula, and whatever we could, you know. And I went to see my son. I left the baby in the room. I told him, we got a baby, little girl that's unwanted. Oh, he was very sick because he had double pneumonia. He was under the tent. But he pulled through, went up Squamish. My husband was laid up with the flu. He says, how did you get that baby? It's unwanted, I told him. Nobody wants it. They were going to say, like, throw it in the home somewhere. But this baby belongs to my grandniece, Bill Baker's daughter. And this baby's my own relative, my cousin's great-granddaughter, Auntie Susan's great-granddaughter. So I kept her. And by the time I went up north, she picked up a little bit more, you know. She was about 4 months, 5, 6, 7 months old then. We got up north. And those ladies say, how did you get a baby? They told me. They start talking their language. They started chattering amongst themselves. We didn't know you were going to get a baby. They said, I surprised you, I told them in English, because I couldn't talk their language, but I understood them, you know. And my daughter grew up there, and I had an Indian boy from up there, Charlie Flanders. Keep an eye on her. She was already starting to crawl. She was pretty strong. I kept everything on time, you know. And she grew up there in the cannery, crawling around the sidewalk with other children. And to make it worse, she just talked their language because nobody talked English. And she didn't hear any Squamish. When we come home down the waterfront, she'd just talk their language. She'd start fighting the other children. She was starting to walk then. She was fat and short. She'd tell them, ah, they stare at her because the others talk English or Squamish, you know. She talked Chinese. They said, no, I learned my language. Oh. They said they turned away. She's staring. She started to ask them for water. She tell them to get wop. They called wop, you know, water. And they stare at her. She wanted to drink. I run in. I got her a cup of water. Gave it to her. And she was so fat, she just waddles. And pretty soon she learned English. She never learned Squamish. because the school children started. The younger ones started like English, but just the small ones that couldn't talk very well, you know, English. So she got on with the English. She understood a word here and there. Pretty soon she learned. She was pretty good. She learned quick, you know.
So we were talking about Sally and how you got her and going up to the canneries and how she learned. She finally learned English.
Oh, their language. When we come home, she started talking English.
Right.
So the next year went up, all she was talking was English. She forgot their language up there. Easy to forget. But I didn't understand them. But I couldn't talk it. I could say a few words like, ah, a yasm. Something about hot weather. And a lady. I could say itak lady, and I could say man, say a few words. In the meantime, I brought Sally back up there. She was quite big then, over a year, and we went back again. That's our life, going back and forth. 6 months up, nights in the, 6 months down Kiplano. Or Squamish, most of Kiplano, waterfront. I had a home there.
What did you do when you were in Kiplano? Did your husband work, or did you work?
I didn't do nothing.
Right.
I was always full house with the people there, because somehow or other, I called them useless people. They never had nothing ahead. And I always had, as I told you, I canned everything I could, you know. When my husband go hunting deer, I'd can all the meat. And at times I'd come down 300-400 cans of 2.5 pound cans of meat, fish, dried salmon. I'd have potatoes planted below Super Value. There was good land there, just above the tracks, being moist like, but kind of dry, not too dry. And our potatoes would grow good, the root vegetables. So we used to have a lot of food. And I should tell my husband, let's go see the manager, Mr. Matthews, give us an order. We're going to go the wholesale. These people are just waiting for us to. They're hard up, I know it. All right.
Did your husband have a fish boat?
No, he didn't. He used to sail with Edward Warnock. The company would supply all the Indians with sail boats. It's all sail boats up there. Very few. I've never seen any with gill nets there. Maybe up Rivers Inlet. Then the trawlers. As my son grew up, Steve Charlie, her father-in-law, that girl, he was about 15. He started running a packer. I don't know how he went through those little islands, and when it's foggy, how he could track his way through them to go to the trawlers. And he'd have thousands of dollars by their fish weight. He had a big weir, you know. But he had a Japanese engineer, a little packer. And he was only 15. And I trusted him. When he'd land, he'd put on white shirt, white cap. He'd be whistling, showing after the girls up there. I used to tease him, he'd get shy, you know. Very quiet. It's not like me, I was noisy. I'm always into everything. That's why they still like me up there. You know, I'd be helping, I'd be laughing, talking, going to everybody. They were used to me. We'd be busy, busy all till that short place there. You start from end of June to end of September. July, August, September. 3 months working that cannery.